everyone. Thank you so much for dialing in to the very first CCWC live blog talk. We have quite a few people online with us tonight. I see the switchboard and it's lighting up. I'm just so excited that we were able to do this show today. It's a career strategy show for lawyers mainly, but anyone who's looking for career strategies in their jobs and in their career, they're welcome to participate today. I'm your host, Lorian Robinson. I'm the founder and CEO of Corporate Counsel Women of Color. And our guest today is Carla A. Harris. Carla is a 20-year Wall Street vet. She's one of the most senior African-American female executives on Wall Street. She began her career in mergers and acquisitions, then worked her way up to various roles at Morgan Stanley. She has been able to work on initial public offerings for UPS, Martha Stewart Living, and I'm just so proud that we have her on for our very first call. Black Enterprise, they've recognized her as the fifth most powerful black executives. In addition to all of the things that she's doing, she also makes time to be a gospel artist. She's performed at Carnegie Hall. She's released 3 gospel albums, and she donates all of the proceeds from the CDs and concerts to 2 schools, one in Harlem and one in Jacksonville, Florida. Carla recently wrote the book Expect to Win, Proven Strategies for Success from a Wall Street Vet. And within the book, you will find Carla's pearls, which they're lessons that she's learned during her 20-plus year journey. Carla, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thank you very much for the invitation.
Oh, thank you. You know, I had the pleasure of reading Expect to Win, and you had some really great pearls of wisdom, and they really just resonated and connected with me, and I know that they will resonate with our audience tonight. We just returned from Beverly Hills where we had the CCWC 7th Annual Conference, and one of the speakers asked an audience of about 600 people to raise their hand and ask, how many of you have a career plan or a career strategy? And shockingly and literally, only 10 people, you know, mainly women of color, only 10 people out of 600 people raised their hands to say that they actually had a plan. I found that very astonishing. But I know without a plan, people will not go anywhere or progress as far as they can. So in your book, you stress being the architect of your own agenda. For those who do not have a plan, can you please explain why is it important to have a plan?
Absolutely, Laurie. In chapter 2 of the book, that's where I talk about being the architect of your own agenda. And I am such a fan of having an agenda because if you have an agenda, it will keep you focused and motivated and delivering excellence every day. And you will not become distracted by what I like to call the outside atmospheric disturbances or what's going on in your political economy inside of your firm. The other thing, and I would argue most importantly, is that having an agenda will keep you from making emotional decisions about your career. And the composition of the agenda is knowing why you are taking a particular role. I like to call it the seat. What is the seat? You know, it's the job that you're doing, and you have to ask yourself when you're making a decision, why do I want this particular seat? What skills do I want to get out of this seat? What experiences do I want to get? What kind of people do I want to meet? What kind of networks do I want to build? And if you know those things about the seat, then you can make a decision as to why that makes sense for you. Then the next thing on the agenda is the house. Why do you want to go to that particular firm? Do you like the people? Do you like the career trajectory? Do you like the platform? Do you think you will have a voice in that environment? So all of those things go into the decision about where you are going to have your seat. And that way it makes it really easy to know when it's time to make a change. So if you don't get promoted, let's say 1 year, you can go back to your agenda and say, do I still have things that I want to get out of this seat? Are there still things for me to learn? can I learn them here faster than if I move to another place? Because sometimes you can use a disappointment and turn it into a chip for yourself. But if you don't have an agenda and you don't know why you're there, the first time you get a disappointment, the knee-jerk emotional reaction is, okay, I quit, I'm out. They didn't treat me well. When in fact, you might be able to accelerate even faster taking that disappointment and turning it into something you can bargain with later. But if you don't have an agenda, you can't be clear on that. The other thing is, with that agenda, you will know when it's time for you to move, right? Because if you know, if you're getting itchy and you're not challenged anymore and things don't feel like they're going well, you go back to the agenda and you say, are there things for me to still learn? Are there people that I want to meet? Is this the right place for me to do it? And if the answer is yes, there's still things for you to do, then you know you're in the right seat. You're in the right job. Then you ask the question, is this the right house? Do I still like the people? Do I have a voice? Am I respected? Do I have a good platform? Do I like the career trajectory? If the answer is yes, you're in the right house. Then it becomes really clear what your problem is. It's not the job. It's not the place or the firm. It's probably a person that's really stunting your growth or impeding your progress. And then you can build a strategy to get around that person. But with that agenda, it makes it crystal clear what to do and when to do it.
And, you know, what's interesting is you were talking about promotion. We're entering that season where
yes.
people are asking for pay raises, the bonus, the promotion, and other advancement. And one of the things you talk about in your book is one of the rules of the professional jungle is every dog has his day. You know, let's just take this in stages. If one of our listeners has worked really hard, and they go in and ask for a promotion, and they're told, you know, no, you cannot be promoted to this role. Strategically, you know, how should they deal with the no? Should they quit? Should they go look for another job? What is the best way to deal with that?
Yes, if you go in and ask for a promotion and you were told no, then the next question is why? And you do it in an unemotional way, but you want that data. I cannot stress this enough, Lori. Data is your friend. Data is your friend. You can't fix it if you don't know that it's broken. And so often people don't put themselves in a position to get the real data. And in most of the organizations that we're all in, they're not confrontational. So if people think it's going to be difficult to give you a tough message, they won't give it to you. And you'll hear, oh, yeah, you're doing fine, yet you're not advancing, and you don't know why. So you always want to create a safe place for someone to give you the real data. And the reason it's important that you ask the question why is because even if you make the decision to move on, you want to understand what stopped you in that organization. Was it your lack of relationships? Was it that you weren't as good as you actually thought you were? Did you not understand exactly the steps that you needed to take for advancement? You thought you could keep your head down and work hard and that would be enough, and that's never enough. There's so much more to the success equation than just hard work and intelligence. So it's important that you understand why you can't be promoted. Then the next question is, okay, if you say I can't be promoted for this year, let's talk about what it would take for me to get promoted next year. What kind of relationships do I need to build? What product do I need to deliver? What do you need to see in terms of my execution? Because I want to have a really clear report card so that we're not having this conversation this time next year.
And you know, what's interesting in your book, and you talk about, you know, if you ask for that promotion and you're told no at that point, try to get an IOU. Can you explain that a little further?
Yes, and that's what I was alluding to a little bit earlier. Sometimes you can take a disappointment like that and articulate your voice and let the firm know that you're quite disappointed. You felt that you had delivered a good product and you want to be made whole over time. And what do you need? So you didn't get it this time. You know everybody can't get it every year. So, okay, you took one for the team, but you expect that you're going to get one for the team down the road as long as you continue to deliver a value-add product. And have that understanding and get that conversation with the person that you're working with or the person that works above that person. That's what I mean by using it as a chip. If you just take the disappointment and walk away mad or angry and you don't have a conversation, then you won't be able to turn that into currency for yourself down the road.
That all makes good sense to me. We all go to these meetings, you know, where people, they're sitting around the table. We all go around on the room providing input. And I'm sure for some of our callers, you know, there may be times that they sit in the meeting silent without adding any input. Can you share your story with us about the lessons that you've learned about being silent in meetings?
Absolutely. It is very important that the organization hears your voice. It is extremely important that they hear you. If you never speak, then they don't know that you're smart. As I'd like to say, there's a 50-50 chance that they think you're smart and a 50-50 chance that they think you're stupid, and you can't take those odds, right? But the more that they hear your voice, the more the organization will want to hear your voice, and then you can use silence as power. But so often people get into these meetings, and particularly women, but, you know, I say, you know, broadly across the board, people of color, if I can make a gross generalization for a second, you know, we'll get in the meetings and we'll say, oh, I was going to say that, but Paul just said that. Oh, you know, George just took my point. Well, what I was going to say sounds a lot like what Nina said. And before you know it, you've gone 45 minutes or an hour in a meeting and you never said a word. Well, how can you protect yourself as a leader if you're not participating in the conversation? And you also want to check yourself. If you find yourself in meeting after meeting and you haven't said anything, you need to ask yourself whether or not your confidence has been busted, because that is a clear characteristic of someone whose confidence has been impaired. And you may or may not even be conscious of the fact that it has been impaired. The way to repair it is to make sure as you go into the next meeting that you say something. Even if you are agreeing with someone, say something and make it a point. That's your goal in that meeting, to say something. In the next meeting, it's your goal in that meeting to say something else. You know, my aha moment is someone had said to someone else, well, I don't know if she's smart, she never says anything. I don't know if she's smart or she's stupid. And I remember thinking, me? Quiet? I'm not quiet at all. But somewhere along the line, I had swallowed my voice. And when I really thought about it, confidence had been impaired. And it could all be corrected. So no, don't despair if you're a listener and you're hearing this, but I'm telling you, the next meeting, make it your plan. As your only goal is to make a comment, even if it is a supporting comment of something that someone else says.
Well, but you know, there are some realities that when people, especially women of color, speak up in meetings, that their ideas, they're shot down, ignored, or just dismissed as being irrelevant. How should one handle the situation where they speak, you know, and someone may respond by saying, you know, that's dumb, or they shoot it down? How do we keep and maintain our voice in what could be a difficult environment?
Oh, sure. If you make a comment in a meeting and someone says, oh, you know, that's a really dumb idea, you said, really? Okay, walk me through why you think it's dumb. Give me your 4 points and see what they have to say. You know, and if they make some good points, then perhaps you might want to agree with them. If they don't make good points, say, well, listen, it sounds like your comment is irrelevant to me because I'm not hearing it. Is anybody else hearing why you think my comment was a dumb comment? Okay, well, let's move on and go on from there, because generally you can stop that action by calling it out.
Now, perception is everything, and you use a formula in your book as it relates to how perceptions are created. You have your self-presentation plus the baggage of the beholder, and I guess
yes,
that equals the perception about you in the marketplace. Can you explain this concept, why it is relevant, and how we can control the way others perceive us?
Absolutely. This is my favorite chapter in the book, Laura, and it is the most important thing that I learned after being on the street for over 2 decades. And every time I have the privilege of speaking to a group of people, I talk about this. It's chapter 4 in the book, and it's perception is the co-pilot to reality. How people perceive you will directly impact how they deal with you. And it's important that you understand the perception that's in the marketplace about you, because that really is what's going to dictate whether or not you get promoted, whether or not you get the great bonus, whether or not you get the great assignment. And it's important that you also understand the definition, the macro definition and the micro definition of success for the environment that you're working in, and more importantly, the adjectives that are associated with success. So my equation about yourself is that your self-presentation and the baggage of the beholder creates a perception. Obviously, when people meet you, when they speak to you, when they watch you execute, there is a perception that is created. And then you add that to what they may have already been thinking about who you are and where you came from, and you put those two together, and a perception is created. Now, the thing to remember is that you can certainly train people to think about you in the way that you want them to think about you, so you can control the perception that exists about you in the marketplace. And if you want to maximize your success, you need to understand those adjectives, as I said earlier. Now, the way you train people to think about you is you pick 3 adjectives that you'd like people to use to describe you when you're not in the room. And the reason I say when you're not in the room is because all of the important decisions about your career will be made when you're not in the room. but also pick three adjectives that are also valued in your organization. And where those three intersect is how you must behave consistently. Consistent behavior around those success adjectives is what will train people to think about you in a certain way.
Now, and what was interesting, at our 7th annual conference, some of the speakers, they stressed over and over and over again the importance of building relationships and building relationships with people who don't look like us. Building strategic relationships, you know, it's an area women of color can enhance and improve upon. What first and second steps should we take on our jobs to get in the flow of building meaningful relationships with people within our organizations?
Absolutely. You cannot do it alone. So you need to embrace and own the fact that you will need relationships if you want to maximize your success in any environment. And the easiest way to do it is when you are first entering an environment, think about the people that actually brought you in. Who recruited you? Somebody was very focused on making sure that you say yes to join your firm. Use that beginning relationship to then extend to other relationships within your organization. Your first 2 weeks on the job, you need to study. Look at who is there, who are the decision makers, who are the toxic folks, who are the people that get things done, who are the teachers, who are the people focused on career development, and you need to target. It's not a natural thing for you to actually go up and talk to people or invite people out to coffee or breakfast. Put it in your calendar. When it's in your calendar, you probably will get it done, and it needs to be that methodical. And building a relationship within a corporate environment is not any different than the normal relationships that you build in your personal life. Each of us has something in common with everybody else. I don't care if they're not your race, if they're not your sex, if they didn't go to your school, if they're not your religion. You both are people. So there are some commonalities that you have. And think about talking to them about basic things. If you're in the same room together and you're listening to a conference or you're listening to a speaker, what do you think of the speaker? I thought these 3 points were great points. And when's the last time you've been to a conference like this? What kind of other conferences do you go to? You know, I'm going to call you up and ask for a cup of coffee. Maybe we can, you know, extend this conversation. Just that simple.
Well,
it's no different. Don't treat it, don't make it more important or scarier than the relationships that you built in college or the relationships that you built in law school. It's the same thing.
Now, let's discuss work-life balance. You have this great high-powered career on Wall Street. You're married, you find time to write and publish, give back to the community, and also perform as a gospel artist. How do you juggle doing it all?
Yes, I'll tell you, Lori, I learned when I was 21 years old that if all I had in my life was work, then my life would become a function of somebody else's day. So it was important to me. My success equation up until that point always included giving back. It always included music. It always included other things than whatever the main focus was. And obviously in school, the main focus was the academics. And once you get into the work world, it's whatever your day job is. But I know that Carla Harris's success equation has to have something in it other than just the day job. So I am maniacal about my calendar. I make sure that I have something that brings me joy in my calendar every day. Because let's face it, work is not always going to go well. So you need to have other things that are bringing you joy into your life every day. That really is what balance is all about. And that's how I define it as chapter 9 of the book. Because most business, popular business press defines balance. They say work-life balance, but what they really mean is family and work. And there's so much more than just your family or just your significant other to who you are. And you need to make sure those things that make you feel great, those things that make you smile, you get some of that in your day. Analyze your day, your typical day, and really think about how much time you spend worrying, how much time you spend concerned, how much time you spend on the email that may or may not be relevant to whatever the project you're working on. And I will bet you a significant amount of money that you will find some extra time. And when you schedule your day and move out some of that extra time, that dawdling time, then you'll find that you have an hour to go walk in the park, but that's important to you, an hour to take a voice lesson at lunchtime, you know, an hour to go sit with a friend, an hour to mentor somebody. We have a little bit more time than we actually think we have, and that's frankly how I get it done. I make sure that those things that bring me joy, I get them in my day, every day.
Well, we have about 10 minutes left. What I want to do is see if we have any callers who may have some questions. If you have a question for Carla, just press 1 on your telephone.
Yes, I do. Hi, Carla. The question I have for you is does your advice change at all in light of this economy where budgets are being slashed and managers are asked to find pennies under the couch as opposed to, you know, giving us perhaps that extra bonus or, you know, promoting us into a VP or other level that will raise our salary? I mean, how do we, you know, I'm just wondering, in this economy, you know, how do we get that extra raise or promotion?
My advice doesn't change at all, Jennifer, because somebody is going to get promoted in this environment. Somebody is going to get a raise in this environment. So why shouldn't it be you? So my argument is that if you think you have created great value and you think it is warranted, then you need to make sure that you articulate that you expect it. And then at least you create a situation for someone to have a conversation with you that says, well, you know, Jennifer, it's not going to be able to happen. And then you can say, well, talk to me about why. And are you telling me that no one's going to get a raise, that no one's going to get promoted? So let's talk about the timeline then as to when that might happen. You know, at least you can get into a discussion. But I wouldn't make the mistake of not having a conversation because I'm concerned about this economy and therefore I'm not going to speak up, because I guarantee you somebody is going to get promoted and somebody is going to get a bonus this year.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Jennifer.
Carla.
We have another question.
Hi there. Hi. I have a situation where my predecessor received stock options. I was promoted to his position as GC, and I've requested stock options for the last 2 years. I'm coming upon the third year, and I want to know from you how you think I should handle the situation. Now, I've been told that, you know, I understand your situation, and I'm working on it.
Okay. Well, I think I would ask the question, what's the policy around granting stock options, and why is there a differential given that you have the same platform? I'd ask the direct question. And if the person says, well, I'm working on it, say, well, I'm happy to be helpful. Who else can I go and talk to about this? I'd be happy to help you as you're working on it. Because you need to understand, the thing that you really want to understand is whether or not now that platform has been deemed to not be a platform that would receive options. And you want someone to tell you that directly if that's in fact been the case. And if that's the case, then you want to find a platform that will give you that. Because sometimes the rewards for certain platforms change, and you know you may or may not have been informed. So you want to understand whether or not anything has changed about the importance of that platform.
Carla, I have a quick question just about a point in the book where you referred back to a time when folks didn't think you were tough. And so you started using the word tough, 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 and at one point you were walking down the hall behind folks and you heard someone saying, you know, we got to get it right because, you know, we're presenting this to Carla Harris and she's tough. And I wonder if as a woman of color there was ever a point where there were repercussions, because sometimes there's a perception that we're too tough or that we're abrasive or that we're too aggressive or assertive. So can you talk to how that may have, carried on further in your career?
Yes, and thank you. Thank you so much for the question, Cynthia. And that speaks to the perception point that you asked me about a little bit earlier, Lori, because I've certainly always seen myself as tough, but somehow in my speech and in my behavior and the environment, it was not getting communicated. And so that was a real wake-up call to me, and that's why I said you can certainly train people to think about you in a certain way, because I made sure that my behavior, my actions all supported the concept that, in fact, I was tough, now that I realized that for some reason that wasn't the perception that exists in the marketplace. And no, Cynthia, it didn't have the repercussions, and I know exactly what you're talking about. And my comment to that is, you remember, as your mother said, it's not what you say but how you say it. And sometimes we forget about the power that's on our faces, particularly women of color. And, you know, we'll say things in a certain way with a certain facial expression, and it will get communicated in a way that we didn't necessarily mean it. And those perceptions that you are referring to are established. So think about the power that's on your face. And sometimes you can get the same message across with the same impact but with a smile on your face, or softening your face, because remember, it's all a part of your communication skills and your communication strategies. And if you are communicating in a way that your listener does not embrace and act upon what you have said, then you have not communicated well. So it's about understanding your audience and communicating in a way that you create action and use the power that's on your face. You don't always have to have a stern, serious, angry look on your face when you're saying something, because that creates the exact perceptions and generalizations that you're talking about. So think about delivering your message a little bit differently. Same message, different delivery.
My question is this. In light of the changing markets and times and economies, jobs are shifting, wondering what advice can you give us so that we can be aware of the changing times within our own organizations, and what practical tips can you offer to help us adjust with the changing times?
First of all, make sure that you are in the mix, that you are going to the town halls, that you are going to the conference room sessions, that you are having direct conversations with your boss and even your boss's boss about how things are going in the company, how the focus shifting, you know, what are going to be some of the priorities going forward in light of this economy, so that you can get a feel for where the firm is thinking about redirecting or doubling up or not on, you know, on their resources. And where people are going to place an emphasis, you might want to think about how your skills match up to some of these new ideas, and particularly new ideas, where if they're heading into territory that they haven't been in before, that means there are probably no resident experts. So someone's going to get assigned that new opportunity, and why not you? So think about what it is they're trying to do and how your skills line up with that, and ask for the opportunity.
And, you know, what's interesting, Carla, in your book, you talk about the importance of having, you know, that career plan, the career agenda. But just building upon one of your pearls, the importance of being flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is flexibility important?
Yes, flexibility is important for exactly the reason that Vicki just asked the question, because things change and people leave organizations, and you want to be in a position to take advantage of new opportunities or shift, even if the seat that you're in is going away. The other reason I talk about in the book that flexibility is important, sometimes you will be shown an opportunity that may not have been on your radar screen. So you have the strategy, you have the agenda that I've talked about, but someone now shows you something else. You should ask yourself three questions with respect to whether or not you should take that risk. Number one, will that new thing give you skills and experiences that you wouldn't get if you stayed in your current seat another 12 months? Will the new thing expose you to people, relationships, and networks that you wouldn't get if you stayed in your current seat another 12 months? And the third question is, will that new thing give you new branches on your personal decision tree of opportunity that you wouldn't, i.e., you'd be able to go on and do some other things that you wouldn't be able to do if you stayed in your current seat another 12 months? If the answer to all three of those questions is yes, you should absolutely take the risk on the new thing. And sometimes being flexible will actually catapult you on your agenda or on your in the lane that you're driving, and you actually get there a lot faster by doing something that's off the beaten path. That's why I stress the importance of being flexible.
Should we be approaching our companies about taking these international assignments? Would that help to accelerate our careers as women of color?
I think in today's environment, Lori, having an international tour is very important. When you look at today's CEOs and the emerging CEOs, many of them have had a stint internationally. They might have not spent a year over there. They might not have spent 5 years over there, but they might have spent a quarter or two, because we are in a global economy, and it is competitive globally, and you need to know how to motivate and inspire workforces that come from all over the world. And if you're going to be the leader of a global company, you need to have that international experience.
Yeah, and you know, what was interesting is you were talking earlier about developing different skills and different strategies, communication strategies. Did you ever take any courses on, you know, how to effectively communicate, or like, how do we know that we are communicating effectively? Is there a place we should go to take seminars and classes on these things?
Well, I'll tell you, I have never taken any public speaking classes or any communication classes, but I will tell you that you can get real-time feedback by just talking to your peers. And, you know, asking the question, am I clear? Or, you know, can I speak in a way that is where I should elaborate more? Should I actually be more. But get that real-time feedback from somebody that you trust, a real mentor that can tell you a little bit about your communication style. A mentor should be able to tell you about your communication style and help you to be a more effective communicator. And listen very closely to the feedback that you get at the end of the year. Sometimes, you know, they're really trying to tell you something, and, you know, we're so, we go in with a mindset that we don't really listen. So sometimes it's important to just really listen so that you can hear between the lines with what someone is really telling you.
Okay. This is really some really good advice. And before we close out on today's session, did we have any more questions from our many callers that we have on tonight? And I want to thank you all again for coming online and being a part of our very first show. I really appreciate it. And our next show will be on November 10th with Judge Glenda Hatchett. Carla, as we close out, you know, if you had to boil it all down to maybe two takeaways that we should all keep in mind, could you leave us with two takeaways for tonight?
Absolutely. The most important thing I think that we've talked about tonight is the perception point. Please, please read chapter 4 in the book. Perception is very, very important. And as I said, it's a co-pilot to reality. The reality of how smart you are and how hard you work is only a part of the equation. But the perception is the biggest part of the success equation, in my view, and is key to your being able to ascend in an organization. The other thing that we talked about tonight that I think is important is have that agenda. Know why you're doing what you're doing. So many of us have gone to college, we go to graduate school, we go to law school because we know that that will give us a certain type of career, that will give us a certain type of, you know, financial status, et cetera. But, you know, are you doing what it is you really want to do? Are you jumping out of bed every morning saying, you know, I love this and I'd work for nothing to do this job every day? It's really, or it fits my profile, whatever it is. Know why you are in that seat and know why you chose that house. And if you can put together that agenda, and sometimes it's hard work, Lori, because if we've been on autopilot for 35 or 40 years, to sit down and say, what do I really want to do? It's scary. It's scary. But you know what? It is very worth the exercise, because then when things get tough, you go back to your agenda and say, okay, it's a tough spot, but I like this, I want to do it, and I'm going to beat it, I'm going to do well at it, and you keep going. It'll be your inspiration during the tough times. So that's what I'd like to leave the listeners with, and I say, Lori, thank you for the privilege of being on your inaugural show, and I hope I get a chance to come back again.
Well, thank you all, and thank you all for dialing in today. I appreciate it. Have a wonderful evening. Take care.
Bye-bye.